The irony, though, is that if they succeed, if they actually do tear this country down, dismantle it as they want to, then the luxury and freedom and comfort that they take for granted really will disappear. And they will finally get the authentic version of the oppression that they so desperately want.
Matt Walsh speaking at this year's Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
Unless we as the rational, we as the moral, we who understand objective truth, objective morality, unless we stand in the way for their sake and for our own.
You can watch and listen to Matt Walsh's presentation, Making the Case Against Woke Culture, with a recording of the 2020 Making the Case conference. We'll send you links to download a podcast and watch a video stream for a tax-deductible contribution of $250. Find out more at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385.
Susan Anthony and Elizabeth Cady Stanton, Victoria Woodhull, Elizabeth Blackwell, all the original suffragists and really successful women early on in this movement were very pro-life.
Crisis does not invite us to embrace that which is novel, but to hold fast to what is sure and certain.
The point of Scripture is that the texts are about Christ. In fact, Hebrews 10 explicitly says this, Jesus explicitly says it in John 5, and we continue to manipulate the biblical text and make it about ourselves.
Vicar's wives love listening to Issues Etc. while feeding their kids lunch.
Bless us, O Lord,
and these thy gifts, which we're about to receive from thy bounty through Christ our Lord. Amen.
Here is a quote from a study that was published in the American Journal of Psychiatry. Despite professional recommendations to consider gender-affirming medical interventions for transgender individuals who experience gender incongruence, the effect of such interventions on long-term health is largely unknown. The authors of this study are agnostic about what the long-term effects of hormone therapy, reconstructive surgery, gender transition therapy, or is that true? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live on this Thursday afternoon, the 27th of August. We'll be talking with Glenn Stanton of Focus on the Family about misinformation regarding gender transition therapy. We'll spend some time with Joy Pullman, managing editor of The Federalist, talking about a new study about the benefits at stay-at-home moms. There are at the very least educational benefits to that. Then we're going to spend the entire rest of the day with Pastor Sean Denzer. We're going to be studying the little hymn. It's a littler than it used to be. We have a tendency to consolidate these things. The little hymn, O Blessed the House. Pastor Denzer is director of worship for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Joining us to talk about misinformation about gender transition therapy, Glenn Stanton. He's director of Family Formation Studies for Focus on the Family. He's author of several books, including his latest, The Myth of the Dying Church, and a recent column for The Federalist titled, After Correction, Study That Claimed Mutilating Trans People Helps Them Now Finds the Opposite. Glenn, welcome back.
Hey, Todd. Thank you. It's good to be with you.
Can the American Journal of Psychiatry really claim to be agnostic about the long-term effects of transition therapy, be it hormonal or surgical?
Well, Todd, I love how you introduce this section, and actually I want to repeat what you said because it is so important for your listeners. Okay, so we see out here in the world, you know, there's people who, a man who thinks he's a woman who thinks she's a man, you know, there are kids, and we think, well, the answer to this, the compassionate thing that science points us to is hormone treatment and surgery. We just hear that. We take it for granted that yes, that is the prescripted, directed direction that we should take with such people. Well, like you quote from this study at the American Journal of Psychiatry, I'm sorry, I have it right here in my hand. I should be able to get the title right. It says exactly what you said. I'm reading from page one. Despite professional recommendations to consider gender-affirming medical interventions for for transgender individuals who experience gender incongruence, that is, their bodies are different than their minds, the effects of such interventions on long-term mental health is largely unknown. That study came out last year in the American Journal of Psychiatry, and these are leading scholars who have studied this stuff, and they are saying, like you said, they're agnostic. What do we know about the impact of hormone and surgery on gender dysphoria? We don't know. We don't. There is no evidence that it works whatsoever. But here's the thing of my article in the Federalist today. This study, when it was published, they're leading into saying, but this study now proves that surgery is effective, although that's not the full story, which is what we're going to talk about in this section with you.
Well, so before we go on to any kind of correction that needs to be made there, does this mean that doctors, therapists, psychiatrists have been recommending and even prescribing and performing these transitional therapies in the dark?
Todd, that is exactly what it means. It is exactly what it means. And I'm even kind of shaking as I answer that, because yes, and we're having medical professionals across the world recommending this when there's just not the science to support it. And that is precisely what these scholars are saying in this academic journal. And from what I have seen, they're absolutely right. I mean, the data is just not there. So yes, these doctors, clinicians, medical professionals, they are flying blind on this, just assuming that, well, they hear it's a good thing, so it must be a good thing. That is just absolutely remarkable.
And how did the media report on this kind of agnosticism on the part of at least the psychiatrist involved?
Oh my goodness. When this study came out last year, the end of last year, saying, okay, now we know, we didn't previously, but now we know through this study that these two scholars did, one from Yale and one from Sweden, that yes, now we know if surgery is effective. ABC, I mean, Reuters reported on it, ABC News, WebMD, U.S. News and World Report. I mean, everybody was reporting that, oh yes, now there's support that surgery works just fine. Very few of them reported that this study that we're going to talk about, they didn't find any support for hormone treatment, but they said we did find support for surgery, which they had to correct. They were incorrect. That's the whole story that we're going to talk about now. But no, media splashed it all over. Oh, yes, there is support for undergoing surgery, cutting off body parts and things like that in order to heal the mind of a real human being that's suffering from gender dysphoria.
What happened on August 1st then with respect to it's not just a correction, it's actually a contradiction of the previous conclusions?
Well, so this study was published. It was published late last year in the American Journal of Psychiatry, and there were a number of medical professionals, thankfully, who said, hey, wait a minute, there seems to be something not quite right in this article as it's published. And so the journal got a number of letters of criticism, letters to the editor from medical professionals, from research professionals, saying, hey, you guys need to take a second look at this. So what happened on August 1st is the editor of the journal, he opened the edition of the American Journal of Psychiatry, and he highlighted what happened. You know, we published this last year. We heard a lot of criticism. So what we did was we hired an independent analyst to look and see, okay, what is the right story? And they found out that in the original article, the two authors pretty dramatically overstated their findings, saying that, yes, our indications are that surgery is helpful. And that's what they admitted. So it was a correction. It was saying, Yeah, they got their analysis wrong and they got their interpretation wrong. What they said, in fact, the title of the article, Reduction in Medical Health Treatment Utilization Among Transgender Individuals Among Gender-Affirming Surgeries, okay? What they basically found out, and this is what the data showed, is a clinic would have to perform about 49 surgeries of, you know, changing the body from male to female before any positive impact on mental well-being was shown. So yes, I mean, technically they were right. It shows that surgeries are effective, but in the real world of probability, like, no, they never should have reported that this was, you know, effective. So the journal had to admit, and the authors had to admit, yes, we overstated the case.
These are people who suffer from gender dysphoria, who do need help. What kind of help do they need, if not what is so popular nowadays? Well, let's put you on hormone therapy, and then if that's not enough, let's do some cosmetic surgery that is irreversible, by the way, to at least make you look superficially like the opposite gender.
See, Todd, that you're asking a huge question. It's a very important question. These people really do exist, okay? They have a disconnect between what their body is, their male body, and not just in body parts, but in its DNA, in everything. I mean, everything about them is male. But in their mind, not in their brain, you know, not in their physical brain, but in their mind, they understand themselves to be something different. And so, first of all, we've adopted in our world today that, yes, no, the transgender person is a real objective thing. No, it is an individual who has a different understanding of themselves, and they deserve our deep, deep compassion because it is a difficult thing that they struggle with. This journal article itself, I mean, it says that they deal with, you know, significant, they're six times more likely to have mood and anxiety disorders serious enough to require a doctor's care. They're more than three times as likely to have received prescriptions for antidepressants and things like that. They're more than six times likely to be hospitalized after a suicide attempt. So they're wrestling with very significant mental problems. And yes, they do deserve our compassion. You don't cut at the body in order to heal the mind. And that's exactly what this journal was telling us is up to date, up to 2019, previously, we have no data whatsoever that says that cutting at the body or giving hormones to change the body is effective at healing the mind. And now they say, but our study says that yes, indeed, surgery does help, but they were forced to say, no, it doesn't help. So here's the deal. You do not cut at the body. You do not change the body to fix something that is present in the mind. And here's, I want to end this point with this, Todd. Is the research is dramatically clear that especially for children, the overwhelming majority, nearly all of gender dysphoric children, prepubescent, do what the clinicians call desist. They kind of straighten out their bodies align with what their mind says and their mind aligns with what their body is. By the time they hit puberty, they're no longer gender dysphoric. That is because they just come to terms with who they are. You know what? I am the little boy that my body says that I am. Up to 98% of young prepubescent children who are gender dysphoric desist by the time they hit puberty. So that tells us this is not a thing. It's not a state of being. It's a condition of the mind that in many cases just heals itself. But then you've got activist parents and you've got activist clinicians who say, my goodness, we've got a five-year-old child here who thinks he's a girl. We need to, you know, get on board with hormones and surgery and things like that. There is no data whatsoever that says that's the right thing to do, and all the data says, no, that's not the right thing to do. So parents need to know that when they get a check in their gut, like, you know what, this is not a good direction to take this child, or an administrator at a school who has a student who the parents are pushing for this, and that administrator, he or she thinks, well, no, this doesn't seem like a good idea. The data is on your side. There is no support for hormones or surgeries, and you should fight and advocate for the health and well-being of that child not to be subjected to that kind of surgery or hormone replacement treatment.
As if those treatments and surgeries weren't harm enough to this individual who needs other kinds of help, is there data that those therapies are not neutral? In other words, they're not no better off, they're actually worse off after the surgery or the treatment?
Well, first of all, I mean, what you said is just exactly right. There is no data that things get better. There just is no data that this improves things. But they can get worse because they have been given, you know, a remedy, if you will, and been told, oh, well, you should be all better now. Any remaining disparity or dysphoria that you're having, well, then something must really be wrong with you. I mean, when you give somebody false hope for a real problem that's within them, and kind of they just have to be happy with that, I mean, that is not compassion. That is not help. And so there's no real data on that, but no, there is data on the fact that these patients do not get better. They do not get better. And the fact that they feel like they should, because everybody around them, the activists around them, are saying, oh, this will make you all better, this will make you great. No, it just doesn't happen as much as we'd like to think.
Finally, why and how has the medical profession, at least in some cases, been hijacked by this kind of activism?
Todd, that's the big, big question. That's the big question. How in the world can a medical profession be hijacked so definitively by such a small and I mean, crazily influential group? That's a $64,000 question. I think it comes down to two things, and I'm not a spiritual conspiratist, but I think there is a spirit of our age that is challenging the nature of what it means to be male and female, that no, being male, being female in the image of God isn't what God said it was. It's just an illusion. But also, I think it's lack of courage. It's lack of independence of thought, if you will, in much of the medical community. And I think that's why this article is so important, to remind the medical community, you know what? The data doesn't support what you think it supports. And there is this lack of courage, this lack of independent thought to stand up and say, no, I'm going to look at what the data actually says rather than what the fashionable people expect me to believe. And I think we do. We have this courage of crisis and independent thought, which we really need a revival in.
Glenn Stanton is Director of Family Formation Studies for Focus on the Family. He's author of several books, including his latest, The Myth of the Dying Church, and a recent column for The Federalist titled After Correction Study That Claimed Mutilating Trans People Helps Them, Now Finds the Opposite. You can read it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk on Demand Archives. Glenn, thanks.
Hey, thank you, Todd.
Joy Pullman is with us on the other side of the break. We're going to talk with her about a new study about the benefits, the future educational benefits of stay-at-home moms. Then we'll spend some time looking at the hymn, Oh, Blessed the House, with Pastor Sean Denzer, Director of Worship for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod.
How do we defend children's rights? Well, there's one very simple but hard answer to that. And it is that adults need to do hard things.
Katie Faust of Them Before Us, speaking at the 2020 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
Too often, we expect children to do the hard things in marriage and family situations. What about when adults are facing a struggling marriage? If the adults decide, we just can't work this out, what they're really saying is, this cross is too heavy for me. Here, kids, you take it instead.
You can watch and listen to a recording of Katie Faust's presentation, Making the Case for Children's Rights, from this year's Making the Case Conference. For a tax-deductible donation of $250, you can download an audio and video recording. Learn more at issuesetc.org.
Declaring to you the whole counsel of God, you're listening to Issues Etc.
For your next family vacation, consider Our Beach House, a charming three-bedroom vacation rental on beautiful Siesta Key. Just off Sarasota, Florida, Siesta Key Beach, consistently voted America's best, is just 100 steps away. Whether you're watching the sunset over the Gulf of Mexico or frolicking in the warm surf, you and your family will fall in love with Siesta Key. Check us out at SiestaKeyRentalGenie.com or call Virginia at 941-266-1858.
The Simply Classical curriculum for special needs moves at my child's pace and gives her exactly what she needs. So writes Amber, a homeschooling mother who has joined thousands in homes and schools teaching from this uniquely Christian classical approach to special education. Teach students with autism, learning disabilities, or Down syndrome based on ability level rather than chronological age. Use promo code LPR20 today at classicalspecialneeds.com. classicalspecialneeds.com.